Chapter 7 of the book of Daniel is Daniel's vision on his bed. It is different than Nebuchadnezzar's dream in that Nebuchadnezzar's dream was man's perspective of the four empires in what the Bible calls the times of the Gentiles. The times of the Gentiles started when Nebuchadnezzar came down and took Judah up out into captivity. That began the times of the Gentiles. The times of the Gentiles will be completed after the rapture of the church and the seven-year tribulation. God will turn his attention back toward the nation of Israel during the tribulation, marking out 144,000 of them to preach the gospel throughout the 7 years. Multitudes will get saved in that 7 year, and this is my eschatology, this is what I believe, and during that time, God will turn his attention, and then the 1,000-year reign will bring back to this earth Christ in his second coming, setting up his kingdom set in Jerusalem, fulfilling all the promises made to the nation of Israel through their patriarch Abraham. The dream of Nebuchadnezzar is man's perspective of the situation. That's why it is an image. Man was created, if you remember, in the image of God. So anything man would see from his perspective is image in nature. Apart from God, that's all we've got is image. Now ask yourself, how important in this world is image? How we appear before other people? People commit suicide when people slander or talk bad, especially teenagers, get slandered on the internet. Kids have taken their lives. I don't care if you don't like somebody. If you find out they said something derogatory about you, bothers you, doesn't it? You might not even know them, and they say something, and all of a sudden, image. It's an inanimate thing that the statue of Nebuchadnezzar, it doesn't move, it doesn't talk. It is metal. But that's what we're impressed with, isn't it? Metal. Material. Diamonds are forever. We love the stuff we can bang on and see that doesn't have life in it. We think it gives us life. But when you get to chapter 7, when you get God's vision of these four, now you have living creatures. Because that's how God looks at things. He's impressed with that which has life. You see the difference between God and us? Run through the parables that Jesus taught. He never talked about anything that wasn't alive. He told stories about the lily of the valley, the sparrows that fly by, God's created order and creation life, because that's what impresses. We tell illustrations about cell phones and emails and buildings and cars. None of that stuff ever impressed Jesus. What impressed him was living things. And normally it was living things that we bypass every day that have miracles in them. Who cares about a sparrow? Well, Jesus did. He told a whole parable about a sparrow and how much God loves that sparrow. Okay, so that's the difference between the two chapters, but they tell about the same kingdoms. So chapter 7 of the book of Daniel actually was about 40 or 50 years after this. Daniel was a young teenager when he told the dream of Nebuchadnezzar. He was in his 50s or 60s, which I was recently told was quite old. Of course, the person saying it was 18 years old. So here Daniel is an old 50 or 60 at this place. I want to say this. God is not done with your life. I don't care if you're 70, 80, or 90, or 100. He still has things to talk to you about, and he still can use you, and life isn't over because the gray hairs have appeared, or the hairs have fallen, or the waist has expanded. Life isn't over. He still can do things. And here's Daniel in his 60s, and he gets this great vision. Notice it was in the first year of Belshazzar, king of Babylon. This was close to the end of Babylon, but Daniel served under him, and he'll serve under the Persian king that comes in, Darius. Daniel saw a dream and visions of his head as he lay in his bed. There you go. He wasn't on his knees laboring over prayer. He was just kind of laying back on his bed. I like that, don't you? He wasn't rewarded for his, I think you ought to pray, but here he was kind of chilled back. When he wants to show you something, he'll show you wherever you are. Notice, then he wrote down the dream and the sum of the matter. Let me stop and say, for us who are older, it's always good to write things down. And the sooner you write it down after you see it, the better. You have a dream and you wait a couple hours after you get up, you'll forget the whole thing because your mind doesn't work. So Wilbur, when you have a thought, write it down quick, okay? So he wrote the dream down and the sum of the matter. And then Daniel declared, he told what the vision was. I love this because this is pretty wild. But Daniel didn't care. He knew God had shown this to him, and he wasn't ashamed or embarrassed about what God had shown him. Listen, when you tell people that you're saved and born again, your sins are all washed away, you tell some Christians that you stand in grace and you're fully accepted in the Beloved, they'll look at you like you're nuts. But who cares? God said you were. Just declare what God has said about you. And so he declares, I saw in my vision by night, and behold, four winds of heaven were stirring up the great sea. Now in this chapter, you're going to have four winds. You're going to have four sets of wings. You're going to have four heads. You're going to have several fours. Four is the number in the Bible for the earth. There are four directions, north, west, east, south. There are four seasons in most places. Four is the number that's stamped on God's creation. So that's why you see God's dealing in the creation has a lot of fours to it. Now, what are these four winds? Probably satanic activity. There's a place in Revelation chapter 7 where angels hold back the wind while God chooses his 144,000. So probably activities of demonic nature. Notice when they come down, they stir up the great sea, not the Mediterranean Sea. This is just a huge body of water. In the Bible, symbolism works like this. Seas and waters have the idea of peoples and nations. Stirring up, unstable. That which was calm all of a sudden is whipped into a frenzy by the wind. Nations and people are very unstable things. They really are. And they're greatly influenced by demonic forces. This is just the way it is. You won't get this on the evening news. But this is how it happens. God restrains. God allows. Nations are stirred up. Nations go down. Winds come through, but this is the big deal here. All four winds converge, and these winds whip up nations and people. And notice up out of the waters, this is what happens. And the four great beasts came up out of the sea, different from one another. The first was like, now notice it was not a lion. It was like a lion. Daniel was seeing things that you can only, when you describe something you've never seen before, you relate it to something. You know, you eat rattlesnake and they ask you, what did it taste like? And what do you say? Tastes like chicken. Because people have to build bridges from what they know to what they don't know. So here, this thing looked like the closest thing was a lion. And it's the same with all the beasts. Notice in verse 4, it was a lion and it had eagle's wings. Babylon, which this is the beast that's talking about most likely, was known for its city of gold with golden lions all over the place. The great stairs leading up to the main gate, there were lions, golden, following down those stairs. They were known in the way they fought as fast as eagles. There was a battle at Carcinium in 605 BC by Nebuchadnezzar. Nebuchadnezzar was young. His father sent him out to put down the Assyrians and the Egyptians. Had combined forces. The Assyrians were a nation that they had defeated, but they were still hanging out. They went down and got help with the old Egyptians. They came up, and Nebuchadnezzar came out to this battle of Carcinium in 605. And I'm telling you, when the lion got done, there wasn't a warrior left. Those who ran and tried to go back to Egypt were hunted down. Not a soldier made it back. Like a lion rips apart its carcass, Nebuchadnezzar ripped apart that army. Usually you let a couple guys go home to tell the story. They didn't let anybody go home. They tracked them down and killed every one of them, chasing them down through Israel. Okay, so there you have, and let's continue on. Notice, and then I looked, and then as I looked, its wings were plucked off, torn off, and it was lifted up from the ground, from its fours, and made to stand on 2 feet like a man. And the mind of a man was given to it. We believe that this has reference to the person of Nebuchadnezzar himself. Back earlier in the book of Daniel, as the lion with the wings, he was warned by Daniel that God would take away your mind, that he would cause you to be like a beast that went out in the field and eat grass, and it's going to go on for a number of years. Nebuchadnezzar heard the warning and went on, and about a year later, he's walking around his palace, and he looks over and he says, "Is this not the great Babylon which I have built?" And in that moment, he lost his mind. He was caused to be like an animal and a beast. They drove him out into the fields. He ate grass like an animal. And after 7 years, God granted his senses back to himself in what most theologians think was a salvation moment. If you read the account in Daniel, he lifted his eyes up to heaven and praised the God of heaven as the only God there was. I think we're going to see Nebuchadnezzar in heaven. The point is, he had power, he had speed, but he lost his mind over it. And when he did, God put him down. And when he finally stood back up on 2 legs, he had the mind of a man. Finally, it made sense. Finally, he didn't think he was all that. Man has a problem with that. We think we're all that. We are not all that. We are nothing without him. And a man thinks most sensibly when he understands that he is nothing without his Creator and that God deserves all the praise and glory. We like little gods running around and establishing our kingdom until God pulls the plug and all the pride runs out of us and we just lift our hands to heaven and say, "Lord, without you, I can't take the next breath." And only in that you got sense. Only in that you've got a mind that is like a man. Okay? That's what happened to Nebuchadnezzar. That's the wings. Thank God he plucked your wings off. Some of you still got some wings. You're flying around there. You think you're a lion. You think you can conquer. He'll pull those wings off you. Amen. You'll think like a man, finally. So let's go on. Notice in verse 5, "And behold, another beast, a second one, like a bear. And it raised up on one side." I was out with Karen on a walk the other day. We were going by some woods. She wasn't going fast enough for me. I kind of wanted to get home. The mosquitoes were bothering me. And I said, "Hey, Karen," I said, "do you know how many black bear there are in Florida?" I said, "There's so many black bear, man. I mean, they got a hunting permits now. They're letting them in." And I was like, "What was that I just heard in the woods?" All of a sudden, he's just picking the pace up and just got out of there. I just got the job done. I got home. David, that's cool, isn't it? Whatever works. Thank you. Notice the bear. He was raised up on one side. If this was Medo Persia, the ones who came in and conquered Babylon, this is probably a reference to Persia being the stronger of the two peoples that joined, the Medes and the Persians. Cyrus the Great was a Persian. He led them. He had some relatives that were Medes. It's kind of hard to break up a kingdom when you got people in the family. You know, you got to keep the Medes around because, you know, you got a mother-in-law over there. So they come in, but the Persians were definitely the stronger of the two. Probably the reference to the bear up on one side. Now, let me be fair here. We're assuming these are the cases. But you can read some awfully good conservative theologians who think that these are other kingdoms and other situations. Okay? So this isn't just as easy as just telling you this is that kingdom. We think it is. But some see the lion as the Persians and the bear as the Greeks. And anyway, just I wanted you to be fair that you'll read other things. You really will. So this isn't just like tack, tack, tack. All right, let's go on. Notice that it raised up on one side. It had three ribs. If this was Persia, this was probably Babylon, Lydia, and Egypt. Those are the three ribs that Persia had in its mouth at the time, between its teeth. And it was told to rise, devour much flesh. Now, the Persians had a particular way of attacking. It was very bear-like. Their idea, if you ever watched the movie 300, is to basically throw men at you by the millions. The troops that sailed to Greece, to attack Greece, were about 1.5 million Persians who sailed over into Theopolis to attack. And their idea was they weren't real smart, but they didn't care about human life, so they just kept rolling people at you. Now, the Greeks developed the whole, I don't want to go into 300, but the phalanx, the whole, the idea of developing that position where every man was by each other's in a shape like that. And they just, but the Persians didn't care, they just kept throwing men. And it's like a bear. They just bull rushed you, and that was the idea of the Persians. Okay, let's go on. Verse 6. After this I saw, and behold, another like a leopard. What do you know about leopards? They're fast. They're fast. Alexander the Great was the fastest. He conquered the known world faster than any other man. By the age of 32, he had reached India, having conquered Persia, the entire Mediterranean basin, Egypt, all the known world in the Mediterranean basin. He had conquered by the age of 32. His generals came to him, being four, and said, "We're done. We want to go home." So in returning, he got sick and he died in Babylon at the age of 32. But he was a leper and he had wings. Notice in verse 6, had four wings of a bird on its back. Notice the speed. I mean, you got two wings, you're fast, but you got four wings, you're moving. Notice, and the beast had four heads. Those were, again, we mentioned last week, the four generals of Alexander. There was Cassius, who took over Greece, Sparta area. There was Ptolemy, who went down into Egypt, intermarrying with the ancient Egyptians, creating the Egyptians that we knew in biblical times, Cleopatra being one. There was Seleucus, who took over Syria north of Israel. Those are the only two generals we really care about because they affected the land of Israel. And there was a fourth general, look it up, I don't know who it is, but he stayed in Persia and took over the Babylon area. So that's how it got split up. All right, let's go on. The beast had four heads and dominion was given to it. After this, I saw in the night visions, and behold, a fourth beast. Now, this one was so bad, there was no beast to relate it to. This was something bad, terrifying and dreadful, and exceedingly strong. The marked feature about it was the big iron teeth. It had great iron teeth. It devoured, it ate, and it with its teeth it devoured, with its feet it broke in pieces, and stamped that which was left with its feet. This was a moving, crushing machine. We believe this is the Roman Empire, fought with weapons of iron. They were dominant. Wherever they came and showed up, you obeyed. Rome set up two forms of government wherever it set up. It depended on the reaction of people where they showed up. If they were a rebellious people, they would set up a system where they would have officers and soldiers set up. They were more of a military state. if they came into your town and you were kind of laid back and chilled out and you said, "Hail to Caesar, everything's cool," they would set up a very laid back situation. You can only imagine what government Rome decided to set up in Israel. It would be the former and not the latter. That's why you had Pilate there. That's why you had military presence, okay? So wherever they set up, they let you go on as long as once a year. Eventually, that came into play where you said, "Hail Caesar," lit a candle, the whole deal. So anyway, they just wanted submission. They didn't want any trouble. They just wanted to conquer and crush and take over stuff. Okay, so notice, we go on, and it was different from all the beasts that were before it. And it had 10 horns. Now, the horns fascinated Daniel, because he's studying them. Verse 8, "I considered the horns, and behold, there came up among them another horn." A little horn. Now, horns in any animal are a symbol of power. They're a symbol of conquering. Ram's horns. Animals use their horns for power. That's just what they do. So this little horn came up from before which three of the first horns were plucked up, notice, by the roots. So they didn't just break them off. They yanked them up violently out of the roots. This is most likely, in our times, the revived Roman Empire, which still goes on in some kind of confederation of 10 states. We believe probably in Europe somewhere, within the Europe Union. Now, if you look at the things that are going on, Europe is getting a lot more attention than it ever has before. The Euro, Greece's mess down in there. They are really advancing as a civilization a lot faster than we are. It doesn't look like the old world in a lot of places anymore. It has really come on in the last 30 or 40 years and advanced itself. And it really does control a lot of the world. Let's read on, and we'll talk more about that in a second. "And behold, in this horn were eyes like the eyes of a man, and a mouth speaking great things." Meaning boasting things, meaning blasphemous things, meaning things that no man has ever said before, like he was God. Here you have the introduction of the Antichrist, who I believe is living today. I'll show you a picture next week. Verse 9, "As I looked, thrones were placed, and the Ancient of Days took his seat." I love that. "He sat down. His clothing was white as snow. And his hair, the hair of his head, like pure wool." Go read the... You can't really understand Daniel without getting into Revelation. And you really can't understand Revelation without tapping into Daniel. Look at the picture of Jesus Christ that John sees in the first couple chapters of Revelation. I think the first chapter of Revelation. This is the image. This is what he sees. Notice it goes on and says, "His throne was fiery flames." In contrast to the hideous beasts that came up out through demonic forces, here you have a picture of magnificence and beauty and glory. And overwhelming, incredible, I don't have the words to say. Notice it goes on, "His throne was fiery flames, greater than the Wizard of Oz. Its wheels were burning fire," its base. "A stream of fire issued out from before him." This is most likely a stream of the fire of the judgment of God on these nations and on these powers and on this demonic forces. Fire purifies, does it not? When fire gets done, it's all gone. "A stream of fire issued and came out from before him. 1,000 thousand served him. and 10,000 times 10,000 stood before him. Angels, we, isn't that beautiful? We will stand before that throne. We will see that fire and we will see the judgments. If those tens and ten thousands are us, perhaps so. The court sat in judgment and the books were open. This is called in the Revelation the Great White Throne Judgment. This is the judgment of the nations and of the people for their sins. Notice in verse 11, I looked then because of the sound of the great words that the horn was speaking. And as I looked, the beast was killed, and its body destroyed, and given over to be burned with fire. Wow. Hollywood doesn't write stuff like that. This is incredible. These aren't printed on a page. This is the future. We will see this. You know, we live in